Musqueam and the Greater Coast Salish for being my hosts for the past 4 years, and hopefully more to come. I've been on this land since 2019, pursuing a Bachelor of Arts and major of Sociology and minor of First Nation Indigenous Studies. I've been hosting Unceded Airwaves for the past few months, and I love every minute of it, especially the conversations that I'm honored to have with guests and folks around the station. Today on Unceded Airwaves, I'm very excited to have a fellow Northerner on the show, the local celebrity and prolific storyteller, Richard Van Camp. I've been reading Richard's book since I was a teenager living in my home community of Hay River, which is about a three-hour drive away from his home community in Fort Smith. He's a Northern celebrity that I have yet to come across paths with in person, but I'm so happy to be meeting with him today over Zoom. So Richard, would you like to introduce yourself in whatever way feels right to you?
Easy D, Musi Cho Cleo, Richard Van Camp, CAC, Hobotsa, Gotso, Ate, Honey Ho, Edmonton, Nade. Hello, everybody. My name is Richard Van Camp. I was born and raised in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories. Well, you know, they worked on that road. I think it's only an hour and a bit now to Hay River. So we grew up as cousins, distant cousins. And I grew up in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories, but I currently live in Treaty 6 country, Edmonton, Alberta. Musi Cho, thanks for having me. Nice to finally meet you.
Yes, it's wonderful to meet you too. I'm so happy to feel that the good vibes I get from reading your books come across even over Zoom.
Thank you. Bless you. Bless you.
It's a joy to have you on Unceded Airwaves. And are you ready to jump right into it?
I'm ready. Let's rock. Let's party. I woke up in a handstand today.
My first question for you might be a little redundant, but how long have you been a storyteller?
Ooh, good question. Oh man, you just T-boned me there emotionally. Well, let me just start with this. So I've had 27 books out these last 27 years. And I think my storytelling really began. Well, I've always been a big gossip, hey? Like I'm the canary of the South Slave region of Northwest Territories. I'll sing for anyone, anytime, anywhere, 24/7. But, you know, gossiping is really networking when you think about it. No, I'm just kidding. So what happened was I published my first novel in 1996, and I found literary readings to be very boring because you can read the book any old time, but I'm here. And while I'm here, why don't we have fun and visit and just share like UFO stories and Sasquatch stories and little people stories and good ghost stories and haunted wood stove stories. And I found that that fed my soul way more than reading the same passages over and over and over. And that really, I think, has been the secret to my success, because what I find is people are they're lonesome to visit. Everybody is craving culture, community, and connection. So when I get up there and I share miracle stories and stories of hope and really funny stories where I make fun of myself and all my antics, what that does is I think it really welcomes people into a good visit. We're all craving good visiting. And when people meet me in person, they say, well, I want to see what all the fuss is all about. Maybe I'll read one of his books. And then they go, oh my God, this is really well done. This guy's not messing around. Well, I'm not messing around because I have great editors. It's my editors who help me take my craft to the next level. And then when somebody discovers my work, maybe it's a collection of short stories or The Lesser Blessed, they start to realize that so many of my books, it has the same characters. Sometimes they're younger, sometimes they're older, some of them are still alive. And they start to understand that, you know, my literature is really an unfolding galaxy. I don't even know where it's going. And that's the best part. I just keep showing up and the characters tell me what to do. So I think I kind of answered your question. The storytelling, I think, was born through having to tour and just realizing that literary, it's, I can't beat the voice in your head when you read my work. You're going to do it far better than I ever will. But in the meantime, while we're here, why don't we just have a really good visit and just rock out with some deadly stories?
That comes across so well in your writing, because I was going to ask you about gossip, actually, because I've been carrying around, I don't want to call it a theory, I don't want to call it a joke, but it's like a food for thought that gossip is a way of knowledge transmission and production. Like if there's a danger in the community, you're going to hear about it from your auntie over the phone or with your friends over lunch. And
then gossip is, it's also how we muskox up and protect ourselves, because you want to know who the children hunters are in your community. You want to know who is a dangerous date. You want to know who's haunted, right? And so we've always carried news, but at the same time, please know that when I meet you on the playground and we're watching our kids together and I open up with a good UFO story or a good ghost story, I'm really testing you. Do you know we point our belly buttons to people that we trust? Did you know that, Cleo?
I actually learned it last week reading Night Moves.
There you go. So when I meet somebody, we're like convicts in the yard. We only have so much time together. So you better be bringing me some juice when I go back into my little cell, because I don't get out much. I don't have any friends. You know, I owe lots of people lots of money. You know, I got to keep it on the keemooch all the time. Do you know what keemooch is?
I do not. What does that mean?
That's Cree for on the sneak. You got to keep it on the keemooch. I'm always on the keemooch. Hey,
the keemooch.
Sometimes I got to dine and dash, you know. You got to sit with my back to the wall, you know. Anyways, that's why I sleep with like my gonchon and my hockey socks, because you never know. Sometimes you got to wake up swinging, eh?
Got ready to fight.
Make a run for it out that side door. So I find that when I meet somebody, I just have to be me. I got to shine. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. God hates a coward. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we're from Fort Smith, NWT. We're humble enough to be awesome, awesome enough to be humble. And so when I meet you and I start telling you a story, I'm really watching how you're receiving it. Are you open? Are you closed? Is a juicy story going to trigger you? Are you going to be offended because of your spiritual and religious beliefs? If so, we're never going to be friends. You're a dud. Mm-hmm. You're a one-act play to me. You know what I mean? I'm always going to find somebody with the juice, because that is how I feed myself, right? This little omnivore looking for juicy stories. And I don't have time to waste. So that's why I always say, bring the weird. It's like we're dating each other. I can't hide who I am. Mm-hmm. So I might as well just let you know now that I have great UFO stories. I've got great Sasquatch stories. I've got really wicked ghost stories and breakup and makeup stories. You know, I got the juice, baby, and I'm counting on you to bring the juice, because we're in a freaking pandemic, year four. So this is how I, as an extrovert, this is how I thrive, is with really delicious stories to think about, because those stories really inspire me and they help me, because I write every day. I know you want to write, ask about my craft, but I get up really early every morning, sometimes 4, sometimes 5. And I go, doesn't matter, 365 days a year, even on my birthday, even on Christmas, even on government payday, even $5 treaty day, I get up before anybody and I write. And so that's why I always need fuel. So gossip is fuel. But I think in the bigger picture, gossip is how we protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm in a similar boat, being in my fourth year of university now. I'm constantly writing things. If it's not for class, I'm texting. And I'm texting my mom or my grandma, telling them about the crazy stuff that went down today on the bus. And definitely, you need something to go in for something to come out. And you need someone to bounce your ideas off of. And yeah, I relate a lot to you being an extrovert and always wanting to talk to people. In high school and in middle school and in elementary, all my report cards said, Cleo's a great student, but needs to stop talking to their neighbors so much. But how could I not talk to my neighbors?
Well, you were just gathering medicine for yourself and for your community and for future generations. And now look at your beautiful job. You get to interview and share in that good medicine.
Yeah, that's what I really hope to do, is to share these good conversations and talk about what brings us joy and what we're really working towards and what like motivates us. And I know a big part of what motivates me is community and where I hope to be in the end. But the past year, like, you know, pandemic and things, I'm always looking past the pandemic and when it ends. But now we're just adapting, and you have to acknowledge that now is what you have to be looking forward to, and what's going on today, what's going on in your life and the lives of your family members.
I agree. Before the pandemic, I was on the plane 2 or 3 times a month, because that's how writers made their money. And I missed a lot. And the gift, and there have been several gifts during this pandemic. And these are, you know, really overwhelming times, but I can honestly say the gifts that we've received is me being home, me being far more present, me having a routine. I think we really, all of us as mammals, we thrive. Certainly I do. I can't speak for everybody, but I thrive when I have a routine. My stories, my writing, it just grows absolutely every day. And the other gift, of course, is that here in Edmonton, we've adopted so many families the last 3 years as family. So many of our friends are now family. And, you know, 3.5 years ago, I was racing one way to catch a flight and other people were hopping in their car to get to work. And we'd see each other maybe once a month on a weekend if we were lucky at the park with the kids. But now often it's like we see each other every day now at the arena or on the hill down in the ravine. Or it's absolutely been an astonishing time as well, coming, you know, and every day doing our best through this.
Do you find living in Edmonton, you see a lot of Northerners in the mall?
No, because I don't really go to malls. I'm COVID cautious, but I will say what I love about Edmonton is that everybody here has time for stories. So everybody at Save-On has probably heard one of my stories coming through the till. And nobody's told me, I really don't want to hear another ghost story, Richard. I'm good. Or I don't want to hear a story about that time your brother was single. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hear about your uncles when they come to Yellowknife. Everybody here, I find in Edmonton, because it's, I find the Northern spirit is here. And I find that everybody, like, everywhere I go, like I bike to get groceries, and I find I always get the big Northern nod from people when I give it. And I really love the community that's everywhere here. It's, I find, in my opinion, Edmonton is a very kind city, despite what you read in the headlines. I know Alberta is often considered the stinky cousin in Canada and the Canadian family because of the antics that happen here. But what I see on the ground when I'm biking, you know, when I'm pedaling and praying not for a chain slip, is people here love to visit and they appreciate good stories.
I totally agree.
They're not stuck up. Look in Vancouver, Victoria, Toronto, Yellowknife, housing prices have really stressed people out. There's no stress like money stress. And I really can't stand what that kind of stress does to families. I really can't stand, it really breaks my heart when I see people that are so stressed. Like, you go to Vancouver, try telling one person at a park filled with kids, try telling another parent one good juicy story. Everyone's on their phone working on their side hustle. It's freaking dumb. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's lonely, you know. Before the pandemic, the Globe and Mail did a poll asking how many Canadians were lonely. 3 out of 5, this is before the pandemic, 3 out of 5 who wrote back said they were lonely. They were all in their little rabbit trails, you know, and in life, you can only look at your phone and the screen for so long, right? Again, I really do feel each and every one of us is craving community, culture, and connection. So as soon as we're done, Cleo, I'm going to go pick up my little one from grade 3. And there's about 7 other parents that are just as gossipy as I am, and they've got the juice. And as an extrovert, you know, I've been working hard all day. I've shoveled. We woke up to a little bit of a blizzard here. I've got my exercise. Now I need my juice. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get my juice before supper time, and it's going to be fantastic. And I always, you know, I think stories are gifts. And what's one of our DNA laws is share what you have.
Yeah, your stories really are a gift. Like, even when I read The Lesser Blessed in probably 2016 for the first time, it felt like I was sitting at one of my family's coffee or kitchen tables, drinking red rose tea with a big hoop of honey in it and listening to their memories and their gossip from when they were my age or when they were like off doing something in the big city. You hear stuff and the characters you'd hear would make reappearances in the same way in your short stories and your graphic novels and your books. People make reappearances because community is there and because we're all interconnected. And sure, so-and-so might not get along, but they're going to be in the same story a couple times because they're in the same space.
And they may not get along, but maybe years later, they're fool around. Because that's what happens sometimes. Because love is right around the corner from hate. Mm-hmm. And hate is right around the corner from love. Did you say a great big hoop of honey?
Yeah, a mound of honey on your spoon when you put it in like the jar.
That is gold. I love that. Thank you. A great big hoop of honey. I think I got to use. Can I use that?
You can most definitely use that.
Okay, Masicho. Oh, Hoka. This visit is paying dividends. I love it. Well, thank you. Yeah, and the best part of being a writer is I get to bring my community with me. So, you know, I was raised in 1971. I was born in 1971. So I was born and raised in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. I took off for college, but it was a wonderful time because families still visited families, and I see a lot of changes in the north and right across Canada where people come home and the screens come out. A lot of people don't want to visit, but I was raised in a time when, you know, when the streetlights came on, you guys better start heading home or at least start thinking about coming home. Mm-hmm. Wasn't the end of the world if we were out with our buddies and our friends, because I really found that Fort Smith looked out for itself, and it was just the best. Like growing up, we had Fraggle Rock and Good Rock and Tight with Stu Jeffrey and Night Tracks and Degrassi Junior High and Aliens, Terminator, Predator, and, you know, all the toys that came with it. And to be raised in a time of the birth of pop culture was phenomenal. And, you know, I was in love with Platinum Blonde. I was in love with Sisters of Mercy and the Terminator 2 soundtrack. And so it was really, and also Dungeons and Dragons. I played Dungeons and Dragons quite a bit. But it was pop culture that really, I think, saved me from a lot of nefariousness. You know, I didn't get the dose. You know what I mean? You know what the dose is?
I don't think so. What's the dose?
That's code for an STI. I didn't get the dose.
Oh, my goodness.
Get the dose. You can't get the dose when you play D&D. Hey? How about this? There's no dose in the D&D, baby.
You're busy making your character sheets and making their backstories.
That's right. Don't got time. For the I didn't even know about the Kimuch back then. I was too busy trying to survive Attack of the Lizard King Volume 1.
I'm so curious. With your characters, they really feel like they're just living somewhere when they're not on the page. Do you ever get frustrated with them and what they do?
No, because right now we're working on a graphic novel series called The Spirit of Denende. And so book one is called The Blanket of Butterflies, and that's out. And that's where I get to put everybody. I put Torchy, Sven, Flinch. I put Benny the Bank. I get to introduce new characters. I brought in Crow for book two, who you get to read earlier on. And I think Godless but Loyal to Heaven and Night Moves. Mm-hmm. So the beauty of what I'm working on now is some of the characters that are in my short story collections are now being illustrated right now by Scott Henderson. And I just sent in book three to my agent for her to look at before she sends it on to the publisher. So I never get frustrated with them. I'm often surprised by them. So I'll give you an example. Tomorrow I have to write a very difficult scene from four or five new characters I'm working on in a new novel. And I have all my notes. My notes are always right here in my little grade four handwriting for mm-hmm. what needs to happen. And it's I can't wait to do it. I'll get up at 4 or 4:30. Well, Saturday, maybe 5. And then I know exactly what I need to do. And that's how I am. So I write in the morning. The whole day is spent gathering whatever I need. I make my notes. And then next morning, get up, have coffee, head upstairs, have another coffee, and get it on the page. And I think Steinbeck did this too, where you stop just when you knew what you need to do next tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
What you need to do, right? So then
I know exactly. I know exactly what I need to do.
You're like with a blank page with no idea what to do next. But you,
no.
So you're like, your process, you go through it. And when you know that you've done a lot of work today and you have a bit more to work on tomorrow, you stop there.
That's right. I always know where to stop. And then I'll switch to left brain because the emails never stop. And so it's good. So take a break, have lunch, you know, go shovel. And then I have discovered 27 years into my career that the emails and the business of what I do or following through on sending people resources, that's equally as important as the writing, because each one feeds the other and each one is not possible without the other. And so therefore I welcome it. I accept that there's probably There's already three emails I need to answer tomorrow that are business related and publishing related, and it can wait because, you know, in just a little bit, I'll be at the school to pick up my little one. And then it's our time, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's storytelling time. And yeah, it's a beautiful life. I'm really grateful. I don't know anybody as lucky as I am. You seem pretty lucky, Cleo. You seem really grateful to do what you do. And I think one of my biggest medicines and how I fill my love cup is with my gratitude that this is what I get to do. And I'm lucky enough to have publishers and editors and co-creators like Scott Henderson, who's the illustrator for The Spirit of Denendeh, and Donovan Yachuk, who's the colorist for the comic book series. And to work with Christopher Shai on We To Go War, another graphic novel series we're working with, and Alexander Finbow, our publisher. I mean, we're dealing with some really fearless publishers because every book is a huge investment. And everything takes longer. That's the other thing the pandemic has really shown us is that everything always takes longer when you want to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lesser Blessed took me 5 years to write. And, you know, my new novel, Beast, it'll be probably 6 years before it comes out. And this new book, you know, Don't You Forget About Me is, I mean, I must be 2 years into it, but there's no rush. It takes as long as it takes. I always say writing is like combing tangled hair. Your job is to show up with a brush every day. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, they say a page a day is a book a year. A page a day is a book a year.
Mm-hmm. And with that, we're here with a really quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
But if there's really nothing, are you looking for ways to be a part of the community through low-stakes opportunities like volunteering? What about making friends that are really cool or have some common interests? Well, I'm here to tell you that at CITR, you can come volunteer at Volunteer Wednesdays, happening every other Wednesday from 12 to 3 with a really fun activity each time, like making signs or button making. Not only is it a great break from outside stress, but a great opportunity to be a part of the community. For more information, you can visit CITR's Instagram page at CITR and Discorder.
Megamall's debut EP, Escape from Lizard City, goes live on Friday, July 1st. Buy the cassette and lyric book on Bandcamp or stream wherever you listen to music. For the last 2.5 years, you could avoid everyone except yourself. Welcome to Lizard City.
Welcome back to Unseen Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Cleo Skivinski, and today I'm joined by the storyteller, Richard Van Camp. And so, Richard, ever since I was little, I have loved books. I loved the library, the bookstores down south, and I even wrote a few of my own short stories on the family desktop. I've actually looked into them a couple years ago, and they're not that bad, considering they're wrote like when I was 8. They're kind of funny and they're quirky. But now as a university student, I'm constantly writing, and I'm really curious, how did you get your stories published, and how did you do that while being in the North?
Wow, good question. So, like yourself, Cleo, and Musi Cho, for your great questions and for sharing time with me, I grew up in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories. I was always a reader, and like you, I love the library. I love Mary Kay's Library. I love Judy Blume and Essie Hinton and Stephen King and Heavy Metal Magazine and Mike Grell's The Warlord comic and Fangoria, the magazine. You know, I was just such an avid reader. And I remember going to bed early when I was a teenager because I would say, I'm only going to read 200 pages tonight of Stephen King. And I had to, you know, because don't forget, that was the you know, Stephen King at his finest with Pet Sematary and The Dead Zone and It and We were a part of something. I think it must have been what it was like to be young when Harry Potter came out, if that makes any sense. Just that magic, that enchantment, that horror. And I'm often surprised at how violent and brutal Harry Potter is. Maybe that's why kids love it so much. But I just remember saying out loud one day, I'm going to tell the truth about what it's like growing up in the North. And I'm not going to hold back. So I wrote The Lesser Blessed. Took me 5 years, and I started writing it when I was, my goodness, I was working on it. I used to be one of the writer trainees for North of 60, the TV series. It originally started as a short story when I was studying land claims in Yellowknife. I went to Arctic College in either 1990 or 91. So it was a little short story called Me and Johnny. And then it went from a short story to a novella, and then I just kept working on it. And, you know, at that time, it was such a great time for music. I mean, the Ministries, The Land of Rape and Honey was out, and The Cure, Disintegration, and Depeche Mode, Violator, and Sisters of Mercy, Floodland, and The Mission's God's Own Medicine was out. And it was a great time for industrial and independent and underground music to come out. And that, I mean, Loveless by My Bloody Valentine was on repeat all the time. I couldn't have written The Lesser Blessed without it. And so I was lucky enough to meet an instructor in Yellowknife named Ron Clausen, who is our English instructor at Arctic College. And he told me, because he'd been reading my poetry and my short stories and my nonfiction, you know, you're a writer. Don't give your life to politics. There's a school called the Anoukan International School of Writing in Penticton for Indigenous students. You should go there. And we applied and I got in. So I went for 2 years, and I was still working on Me and Johnny quietly because it was growing. It was, I think, not quite a novella, but it was a really big short story. And I got to learn from the late and great Lee Miracle, the late and great Maurice Kenny, and Jeanette Armstrong, and, you know, oh my goodness, Donna Goodleaf, and Beth Cuthand, and Jerry William, and my fellow student, the late and great Lauren Simon. It was a wonderful 2 years. And then I graduated, and I went right into my third year at UVic, where I was studying creative writing. And I knew then that I had a novel, because we were workshopping novels, and I got to workshop it. And it was wonderful at UVic. My instructors were Marilyn Bowring and Bill Valgridson and Stephen Hume and Jack Hodgins and David Godfrey. And so many of the writers there are now, you know, really established writers in Canada. My fellow classmates were such fantastic writers and editors. And I had seen that there was an agent named Carolyn Swayze who was looking for manuscripts. She was advertising in BC Book World. So one day on a whim, I just called her and said, "Hi, Carolyn, my name is Richard Van Camp. I'm working on a little novel called The Lesser Blessed." And I decided to change the name from Fort Smith to Fort Simmer, because I realized that, you know, the story took place in an amalgamation of a little bit of Bechico, a little bit of Yellowknife, a little bit of Hay River, a little bit of Pine Point, and a whole lot of Fort Smith. So I figured, well, I should change the name and fictionalize it. Because I learned when I was writing for North of 60, when I was one of many writers for North of 60, and don't forget, I was a writer trainee, so I was more of a cultural consultant than anything, but I learned that they had created Lynx River for a reason. They needed a fictional community so that people wouldn't think that the series was making fun of their community or their leadership or their nation or their beliefs. And if you create a fictional community, people can let their guard down and relax and enjoy and give it that big northern nod and say, "That's exactly how it is here. That's how it is here too. We're like that too. Boy, they got us figured out," you know, even though in the background, maybe that source material was actually from your community. So I sent it to Carolyn Swayze. She said, "Well, I want to read what you've written." And then she called me right away and just said, "You know, I really do believe that we could sell this to Douglas and McIntyre." And I said, "Sure." And she sent me some papers, and suddenly I had an agent. And then D&M, Douglas and McIntyre, they wanted it very much. And Scott McIntyre was the publisher in those days, and they bought it. And I got to work with a great editor named Barbara Pulling, and she raked me over the coals. She was and is such a phenomenal, phenomenal editor. She doesn't use a computer. She uses a pencil. And it's interesting, Cleo, is that 23 years later, when I sold Moccasin Square Gardens to Douglas and McIntyre, I got to work with Barbara Pulling again, 23 years.
Holy moly.
And and she still uses a pencil, and she's still as tough as nails. And it was such a joy to work with her again. And I think that's why people love the story so much. You know, I've been lucky. It will always be my editors that helped me take my craft to the next level. That was craft, by the way, in case my big lips got in the way. So I'm really grateful for every book. I love every book that I've ever been privileged enough to write. I'm grateful for the team and the collaboration. You know, I've been able to work with Julie Flett and George Littlechild and Scott Henderson and some of the greatest artists of our time.
Amazing. Oh my goodness. It really is like a lifelong journey of just building relationships.
Absolutely. Yeah. And once you find your team, you really don't ever want to let them go. And we're actually willing to wait sometimes for a while for someone like Scott Henderson to finish his work with David Robertson and Katharina Vermette. It's like, no, I will wait. Let's work on the story. And then when you're ready, let's pick up where we left off. Because I'm a huge fan of Scott Henderson and George Littlechild and Christopher Shai and Julie Flett and every artist that I've ever had the privilege of working with.
Amazing. Moving on to my next question, it kind of has to do with land, but you're gonna be surprised with how the question turns out. I was reading Night Moves on the bus the other day, and I read the story The Strongest Blood, which was on page 34 for listeners. I could truly smell the frost and the freezing and like the fall leaves, and I could hear the crunch of the gravel underneath the pickup truck tires. And the crack of the bison and the awe of the battle sent shivers down my arms. And I bet I looked so silly reading it on the bus, because I was like, my face was just giving away as if I was in the truck with their dad. And it made me think a lot about how when I'd be on the highway with my mom and we'd be moose hunting, and when you see a bull moose in full rut, which, by the way, for listeners, the moose in full rut is the most dangerous animal in North America, and the Dene call it to them at like 6 in the morning. They're like, come at me, let's see what happens. And I was wondering, because a lot, I can see that the land really influences how you write some of your stories, especially the sensory things that you include in your stories. Are there ever any stories you've written that you couldn't publish for wider audiences?
Well, I think, you know, we're working on We To Go War, the graphic novel series, and we will put a disclaimer on the cover saying do not read until there's snow on the ground. And that's observing protocol, so we have to be very careful moving forward. And we're actually adapting the short story We To Go War with Amanda Strong and her team in Vancouver. And you, Cleo, I can introduce you. You should go out to the set and see, because we're using stop motion puppets to tell the story.
Is that Spotted Fawn Productions?
Yes.
I'm
yes.
anticipating their newest one, their newest stop motion, because it has a Dene protagonist. I'm following them on Instagram and I'm watching them go through the process.
That's Dove. Yeah, you're getting to see Dove, and we've been very lucky. My Cleacho 101 instructor, Georgina Frankie, has been their wardrobe designer. So she's had to make little dresses out of moose hide and little tunics out of moose hide. And yeah, so that we've had to really observe cultural protocol, because everyone working on set really needs to protect themselves against the Weetigo spirit. Mm-hmm. And I'm allowed to talk about them only because we woke up to a blizzard. I just finished shoveling, so there's snow on the ground. Mm-hmm. Little things like that are really important. But no, I've been very lucky to publish everything. But I'll tell you a funny story. My one of my brothers one night was thrown through a wall at a house party. And when he kind of came to with gyprock dust in his hair, this big guy stood over him and said, "Tell your brother to quit writing books about me." And I was like, "What? Who was it?" He says, "I don't know. I think he was from Rez or something. He got in his truck and drove away. He threw me through a freaking wall."
Just think about him.
Quit writing books about that guy. to this gentleman, I sincerely apologize. I guarantee you, I'm not writing about you. I'm writing about a bunch of people, and I amalgamate them together. So mm-hmm. when you read The Lesser Blessed, so when my friends, when we would go to their house and the mom had a really cool boyfriend, I put all those together and they became Jed. And I still do that to this day. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to be. And I think that's why I'm such a gossip, is because I'm fishing when I'm gossiping, but I'm looking for something back. And as I'm listening, it's really fueling whatever current fire I'm working on. And what I mean is whatever manuscript I'm working on.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. I was going to ask about that, if you really incorporated particular people, but it makes sense that you're taking little bits and pieces from people around you. And that's why they feel right. real, is because yeah. everyone knows someone that has certain characteristics in their life.
Well, you can bet from our visit, I will use a hoop of honey and I will thank you. A big hoop of honey. That's gold. And that's what I do every day is every time I'm telling a story, I'm fishing and you just gave me gold and I love it. And then when I go to pick up our little one from school and I'm standing around with all the parents, right? And I'm telling some juicy stories. I'm fishing because tomorrow morning's going to come quick and I better have something ready for this really difficult scene.
Yeah, no kidding. I do know that I'm hoping to have you do a short reading for us before you have to go pick up your small one. I do have some parting words for you. When I was in grade 10 and I was in Northern Studies, which for listeners, that is a required course for graduating in the Northwest Territories, and topics of residential schools come up and land-based learning, and we have elders come in to teach artwork and things alongside all those bigger topics to kind of balance out the heaviness that comes with it. And in this class, we had to write an essay on a book, like a book review. And they presented us with a bunch of books on written either by or for Northerners or for Indigenous people. And I had actually, when I got to look at the selection, I read most of them already as a kid going to the local library. The only book I hadn't read was Lesser Blessed. And my teacher at the time, who was one of my closest high school teachers, said, "You should read this because I think you will really like the voice in it." And when I did read it, I was blown away because there are so many things that I definitely saw the connections. I was like, that happens in Hay River. I have friends in Fort Simpson that have told me this stuff happens there. I learned a lot of cultural things too about Tlecho people, which I had never been really exposed to in Hay River. And through reading it in grade 10, it validated my desire to write for my community. Although in a slightly different way, because now I'm an academic, so I'm doing a lot more theory-based work, it still is like a thing I draw on. And it comes up in class at times. I've done creative writing with Billy Ray Belcourt 2 years ago over Zoom. And he and I had an office hour for like 2 hours talking about your writing and how we were both so inspired by it. And so I just want to give you a huge thank you, Mussy Cho, for putting it out there. Even 20 years after it was released, a Dene teenager read it and felt inspired and validated to go off to school and do what I'm doing right now.
Oh, bless you. And I thank you for those words. I'm going to put those in my heart, and you're giving me fuel to keep on this journey. I think that your words have just blanketed me in such a beautiful way, Cleo. Thank you. And I think I was just saying yesterday to a writing class that, you know, when you choose to serve the story, because the story is the boss. And when you choose to get out of the way and comb that tangled hair and welcome that magnificent beast into the world, and you fire that arrow of light into the world, you're showing others that they can do it too. And that's why I always say, don't you dare hold back. You know, look at Split Tooth by Tanya Tagak. I mean, it's fearless. It eviscerates every reader that discovers it. And I love it because it is without apology, right? When I think about, you know, the graphic novels that I love, like, you know, The Walking Dead or Zero or Cobra, The Last Laugh. I mean, this is fearless writing. And so to everyone listening, I would just say, remain fearless and dare yourself to tell the truth. Share your truth because the world needs it. And you're going to inspire others to share their truth too. And that's a very beautiful legacy to leave behind. So I double dog rib dare all of you cousins, tell the truth. Don't hold back, because as readers, we're looking for vulnerability. We're looking for courage. Mussy Cho.
Mussy Cho. Where can listeners find you?
Well, anyone can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I have a SoundCloud account. You can hear other people reading my work. You can hear my interviews with elders, my interviews with people who have had miracles happen, interviews with other authors. I also have a YouTube channel. And so I've uploaded my grandmother, the late and great Melanie Washi, singing a Dene love song. My uncle Eddie singing a Dene love song in 1991. I've uploaded dozens of hours of drum dances and tea dances and Canada Day celebrations, love song competitions. And that's all with permission of John Gaughan. John Gaughan is a great videographer, a producer, And he retired, and I found all these old DVDs, and I found this footage of my relation singing these gorgeous love songs. And I called him up and I said, you know, the pandemic had just started, and I just started a SoundCloud account because I wanted something for people to go to just to enjoy and listen to beautiful stories. And I said, John, I was just been given a pile of your DVDs. Are they digitized? He said, nope, I'm too old, I'm too tired, and I'm retired. Nobody's paying me to do it. You want to do it, you do it, Van Camp. And so luckily enough, here in Edmonton, there's an organization called Bear Paw Media, and a friend of mine, Lee Skidmore, who has every converter digitizer in the universe in her office. I got in touch with her, and I had a little budget. I received a little Canada Council grant, and she said, no, I won't take your money. I'll upload these all for free. I'll put them in the way that you want. Just give them to me. And she came by, picked them up, and then dropped them off about a week later. And they were all digitized in the format. So the other thing I want to share with your readers is never be afraid to ask for help. Go to those who know, because there's a lot of people out there who are just waiting to share their gifts when they see how hard you're trying to do something magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Musty Cho, Richard, please don't be also, a stranger.
I won't cheap out. But also, if you miss me and you want to read, just go to the library and read, you know, read the books. There's 27 books out in 27 years, and you can read, there's excerpts that are on the SoundCloud account. So, you know, one of the things that we're really proud of was when the pandemic began, publishers were getting a lot of pressure to release more free readings. Mm-hmm. of books, and also to release excerpts of readings of books. And so, you know, my novel, The Lesser Blessed, is now a feature film. It cost $2.2 million. First Generation Films did a beautiful job adapting it, and Anita Doran was the perfect director. You can watch it for free tonight on CBC Gem. It's on there. There's a lot of Ford F-150 commercials. You're going to know more about the Canadian Dairies Association than you ever wanted to, I think. But it's there, it's free, lots of commercials, but you'll get through it. But the gentleman who plays the bully, Darcy McManus, in the novel, his name is Adam Butcher. And I thought, well, why would I want to read Whistle? So Whistle is a book I wrote. It's part two of The Lesser Blessed. It's what happens to Darcy after The Lesser Blessed and the movie ends. And so I got in touch with Adam, and I said, Adam, and I had a little bit of Sunyao, a little bit of Samba, a little bit of cash. And I said, you know, I don't have a whole heck of a lot, but, you know, can I pay you to read the first letter that Darcy writes to Brody in Whistle? He said, yeah. Can I do it on my phone? And I said, yeah, sure. And he did. It was a beautifully recorded. So what I love, and the reason I'm sharing this with you, is I love collaborating. And then we received permission from Pearson Canada, the publisher of Whistle, to upload the actor who plays Darcy McManus in the movie reading in the Darcy McManus voice, Adam Butcher, the actor. And I love doing that. It's like, for me to read is actually quite boring. Why don't you listen to an actor with that bad boy growl?
Mm-hmm.
That to me is far more interesting than anything I could have done. And people who have heard Adam Butcher read the first letter that Darcy writes to Brody, a victim, a former victim of his, it's absolutely heartbreaking. So if you want to listen to some, just go on Richard Van Camp SoundCloud, and you'll see a picture of the cover of Whistle, our novella on it's about mental health, and it's about restitution, and it's about restorative justice, and it's about a bully starting to understand why they became a bully. I love writing heartbreaking stuff. I love it, Cleo. I can't stop. I'm not even sorry I do it.
Well, heartbreak's part of being a human, isn't it?
Yes.
Heartbreak only means that you have loved. And to love
is the beautiful thing. Remember what they say. Love is right around the corner from hate. Hate is right around the corner from love.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true, but that's what they say.
And heartbreak's somewhere in the mix.
That's right. True love travels down a gravel road, baby. I'm just kidding. That's the name of a song by the Afghan Whigs, who I love.
Mm. Would you have time for a quick reading by chance?
What would you like me to read?
Honestly, anything you feel would fit the vibes of what we just talked about.
Did you ever read Love Walked In?
Ooh, I haven't, but I would love to hear it.
Okay, I have to now you're asking me to do the hard stuff here. Love Walk, and I think it's in Namus. No, it's in Godless. I think my copy of Godless is downstairs. Let me just run and get it because there's a really funny fight scene.
Okay, perfect.
I think we all deserve a really funny fight scene.
How'd it go? Are we done with them?
No, they must have seen you.
I don't have any friends and you can too. Tune into Teachable Moments on 101.9 FM every Tuesday at 4 p.m. if you're a f***ing dork.
I specifically said no geeks.
But my mom says I'm cool.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre, the SASC, is a free and confidential service which provides support to those who experience sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and harassment. We provide services to folks of all genders, including students, staff, faculty, and those who have a connection to the UBC Vancouver campus. We provide crisis and short-term emotional support, legal, medical, and campus-related advocacy, and outreach and educational programs. We are located in the Student Nest, room 3130. For more information on our hours of operation and other resources and services, please go to our website, amssasc.ca, or visit our Facebook page, AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre.
Okay, cousin, you wanted me to read something funny. So this is from my book, The Moon of Letting Go, published by Enfield and Vizenti out of Winnipeg. And this is from an excerpt from a story called Love Walked In. And I'll set it up. So our main character has to fight a former friend because this character has called social services on a respected, quote unquote, respected community member. And social services has brought the hammer down. And this narrator was right that they did a good thing by calling social services and they protected other children from this person. Here we go. And I'll change the F words to frick. Okay. Just because I don't want to get sued. I'm tired of getting sued. Everybody tries to sue me. Okay. I'm just kidding. Nobody sues me. I was an altar boy. What are you going to do? I'm good with JC, baby. Here we go. The day Jonathan and I had it out, Donna was working at the coffee shop. I went there to talk to Jonathan, but I knew the second I walked in, the whole place was brewing for him and me to fight. He hadn't cut his hair, so that was a good sign. Way to go, winner, Jonathan said and pushed me. What's up? What do you mean, what's up? I'm not going to Disneyland is what's up, all because of you. A small group of girls raised from their seats and surrounded us. Fight, fight, they were yelling. The rest of the girls ran outside. Uh-oh, I thought. Once the girls ran outside, there was no turning back. Jonathan shook his head at me because we both knew the girls would lock their arms into the shape of an octagon, like in UFC. Frick's sakes anyways, he says. Now we gotta fight. Way to go, I said. They'd probably want us to whip our shirts off and fluff out our mullets now. That's the classic in this town. I looked around. Even the adults and the Chinese owners knew there was no turning back. All right, Valerie announced as she walked in. Let's get it on. Jonathan stood. We walked out into the bright sunlight and practically half the town was there. The girls had joined arms and they were all grinning. Fight, fight, fight. Ooh, I'm breaking out in a fear sweat reading this. Adults even stood outside the post office while trucks slowed down and pulled into the terminal parking lot. I'd have to fight Jonathan now, and I didn't want to. He had a bad knee from basketball, but that was off limits. Maybe his face bone or his bony ribs. The circle of woman power opened to receive us. The girls all started to cheer and stomp their feet. How cheap. I just couldn't even believe this was my life right now. Jonathan led me right to the center before spinning around. Come on, F word. That's a bad word. He yelled. He whipped off his shirt and fluffed out his mullet. The girls cheered to hysteria, and I could tell by his eyes he was really into this now. I couldn't believe he'd turn us into an Academy Award performance. He tucked his shirt around his belt. I let out my breath and felt 90 years old. Take your shirt off, Gerald, one of the girls yelled, and they all started cheering, shirt, shirt, shirt. I wasn't going to do it. Come on, Gerald, Debbie yelled. Take that frickin' shirt off and show us what you got. The circle quieted for a second. Debbie's brother committed suicide last summer in their basement, so even Jonathan looked at me like I'd better. He lowered his fists. Come on, Gerald. Well, geez, I thought. I took off my shirt and all the girls cheered even louder, even Debbie. They cheered so loud the back stoop of my mullet practically blew sideways. I tucked my shirt into my belt and smiled. Who publishes this? This wasn't so bad. I understood why our dads did this. It was a Simmer mating ritual and our culture all rolled up into one. Fluff the mullet, fluff the mullet, fluff the mullet. They started to chant and I shook my head. God, the women of this town were so bossy. Jonathan motioned that I had to, so I did. I took my time and leaned back like Dog the Bounty Hunter, all slow and luxurious. I flicked my back hair out like I was a party on two legs waiting to happen. The girls went crazy, and I wondered if this is what it felt like to be one of the Beatles in their prime. The girls were stomping their feet and going bananas over our hair, and I caught Jonathan smiling at me. He loved this. Holy cow, his nipples were the color of Monday morning hickeys. Then his face hardened, so I made mine too. I'm going to down you, he yelled, and there was more cheering. The fight was on now, but I stood my ground. I planted my feet on the pavement and raised my hands into his. Okay, Jonathan, how long have you known me? Too long, he said, and spit by my shoe. He gauged the crowd. The electricity was building. Even the bar stars had made their way around us, and they'd won an all-out brawl with bannock slaps and drop kicks. Down him, someone yelled. Yeah, another jeered. Think you're good, Gerald? Jonathan was tough, but he wasn't that tough. He raised his fist and started hopping back and forth, just like in grade 7 when I had to teach him how to dance. We stood so close I could see the sweat beads he got on his nostrils in gym class. I started reading his eyes to see how far he was going to take this when a girl kicked me hard towards him. I looked back. All I could see were hands and eyes, hair and purses. Listen to me, I yelled to the crowd. The second that frickin' principal left town is the second he admitted he did it. BS. He's embarrassed, someone yelled back. Oh, so embarrassed that he stole all your money? I looked at the crowd, all ears. Think about it. This guy's an adult, and he left town in the middle of the night. He's our principal, Jolene yelled. He wouldn't do anything like that. Yeah, the crowd yelled. You're just jealous because you didn't fundraise. You lazy dog rib. Freaking loser. Someone spit on my face, and I could smell tobacco and coffee and something like fries and gravy in it. Gah. Jonathan and I looked together to see who it was. Whoever it was hidden behind the wall of people circling us, kicking us together so hard that Jonathan and I had to hold each other up. We're not friends anymore, he said. I thought I knew you, but it's true. You didn't fundraise. You were jealous because we were going to go to Disneyland, and you weren't. Punch the back of his head through the front of his face, a voice yelled, and the circle grew quiet. It was Torchy and his brother Sven. I didn't even know how they got where they were, but they had leather jackets off, and we could see their tattoos and muscles. They were hardened criminals, and their eyes were warlike and fierce. How cheap. They were dog ribs like me, Kevin Garner, and Wendy. Come on, Torchy said. Is this a frickin' fight or what? Frick, he looked rough with his crooked smile. I looked, and sure enough, they had their cowboy boots on. Dad told me they stuffed their cowboy boots with lead so they could kick you in the eyes when they got you down. Also, they only looped their belts at the 3 and 9 position so they could whip them out in a knife fight. They had Tonka-sized belt buckles, which they sharpened to aim for your teeth and face. Once the whole crowd realized Torchy and Sven were there, everyone broke up and stood still. I saw fear in Jonathan's eyes as he kicked himself back into the crowd, turned, and pushed his way out of the horde. Oh, the crowd yelled, fight him, John. But even that sounded weak. Torchy started rolling a smoke, and Sven watched me to see what I would do. It was like he could melt steel with his eyes. He was so tough. I felt the cold gob of spit roll to my neck. I turned and walked away. I used my shirt to wipe the saliva off. It was just slimy, and I'd probably get TB now. Gross. I was listening for someone to run behind me and try a cheap shot, but then Donna came running beside me. Gerald, wait. I didn't stop walking. She held a hot J-cloth to my face and wiped the spit off. She had to hop up because she's so short. Hold still, she said, and I smelled dishwashing soap and vinegar. Go away, I yelled. You're a hero, she said. I rolled my shirt on. Leave me alone. No, she said. I love you. My eyes bugged as I walked away. Take it easy, I said. There you go, cousins. Right from the horse tooth mouth of Richard Van Camp.
Thank you. Listening. Oh, that was awesome. I haven't
read that in years. Holy.
After just reading a bit about Sven and Torchy and even meeting Gerald in Night Moves, that was awesome.
Thank you. I haven't read that in years. So Mussy Cho. Thank you. That's great. Holy. Okay, well, you have a wonderful day. I have to run now.
Thank you.
Thanks, Neil. Okay, and we'll have a really good visit next time when we party it up, okay?
For sure. Have a good day.
Okay.
Weekend.
Okay, you too. Mussy Cho.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. This is Colin from GBH, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, and that's Canada, boys.